Hello and welcome to Series 7 of Photography Down the Line. I'm Ben Harmon, Director of Stills, a Centre for Photography and registered charity based in the heart of Edinburgh. To find out more about us, to get involved and support our work, please visit stills.org. For this episode, I had the pleasure of speaking to Kelly O'Brien, a creative worker, documentary photographic artist, educator and PhD researcher based in the UK. Kelly talked about her life and work, so much of which is concerned with how invisibility can be used as a tool of possibility. During the conversation, we also took the opportunity to talk about our shared interest in the work and ideas of British photographer Joe Spence. Kelly also spoke about some of the subjects that currently anchor her work: class, labour, family, care, and liberation. Thank you for listening. Hello, am I speaking to Kelly O'Brien?
You are indeed.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you very much.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks for taking the time to do this. What might I be interrupting with this call?
So at the moment, I am at home. I am on my first day of my holidays, actually.
Ah.
Yeah. So I'm actually going away tomorrow to visit family on a two-week holiday before, you know, the academic year starts back. So getting that last bit of sun in.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for doing this when you've started your holiday already. Could you tell me a bit about your route into photography? I know that's maybe quite a big question, but just for those listening, when and how did you start making pictures?
Yeah, definitely. I've been thinking about this quite a lot recently, actually. And yeah, I guess my route into photography was a bit, kind of messy or unexpected. So I kind of just fell into it unexpectedly with no intention, actually. I was about 3 or 4 years out of school, secondary school, and just a bit of a background story to that. Had this poor education and left school with no real qualifications, really. And then after that, worked in like a greasy spoon cafe for a couple of years. And I was really into films at the time. So I would work a lot and then watch a lot of films. Cinema was really important to me. It was kind of my escapism. And where I was living and grew up, it was in Derby on this council estate. There was a college really close by, and I can't remember exactly, but one day anyway, I mean, the college was in a bit of a green spot, so I would go walking up there, and I can't exactly remember if I was with a friend or if I was on my own, but there was an open day that I just stumbled across at the college, and I am quite curious. I just, you know, was seeing what was going on, and I went in or whatever. And yeah, I met the course leader of a film studies course there. It was like a GMVQ or something. And we got talking and just sharing like the love of film and cinema. And she was like, you should do this course. And, you know, I never thought about doing anything really in higher education. And yeah, she signed me up and took a chance on me, knowing that I really didn't have these qualifications, but she saw this passion for cinema. I did the first year and it was brilliant. Got to, you know, think about like, analysing film and learning to use the camera. And then on a BTEC in the second, so I was there for another 2 years. There was one day a week in photography, and it was like an instant connection. And I fell in love with the medium really quickly. I think it was something to do with the fact that I could work on my own with it. It was kind of, when you're making films, it's much more kind of working with people. But with photography, it was something I could really go deep within. And from the get-go, I was taking my camera home and photographing my home environment and the women in my family. And yeah, that was my route into photography, really. That was my kind of connection with it. And luckily I have a photograph of this kind of first meeting with an SLR camera. Yeah, and it's just really poignant to me actually. And at the time I was then kind of expanding my skills in photography and working with film also, and I became kind of working in the UK hip hop scene, documenting that and filming the music, the live music and the artists, and also the drum and bass scene. So my skills in film and photography and my passion kind of took me into music to start with, actually, before and during a bit of my university years as well. But I was very much using then the lens in video and photography to kind of document that Derby UK music scene. So yeah, that was my introduction to it.
How interesting. Derby, of course, has a sort of history with photography education. It's one of the places where the first photography degree happened in the UK, I think. And
yeah, I didn't know that actually. I didn't really understand that that was on my doorstep, because I went to Nottingham to go to university.
Right.
So
yeah,
that's interesting.
Were you interested in process as well, and things like 16mm film or Super 8? Were you quite into the, you know, the sort of analog side of film and photography at that time?
I was using analog in photography, so I was mainly 35mm and square format, but within film it was within moving image it was mostly digital. I think it was something to do with affording the and the resources at college. I'm very much someone that would use what was in front of me rather than, yeah, I was very like DIY like that.
You said that you would sort of photograph what was around you at home, and the women in your family and so on. Are those early pictures, have they proved to be important for you in terms of how your photographic work has developed?
Definitely. Those pictures have come round full circle. So I'm using them now to kind of probe and question wider kind of themes on like work and women and class within my practice now. So for a lot of the time this work kind of sat and I didn't know what to do with it, or I didn't really think I was going to do anything with it. And now it's amazing because I've got this almost like, it's not a family album and it's not really like an archive, but it's this rich, yeah, it's like 2000, since 2003 or four, you know, I was making this work. So, and now I'm getting to kind of interrogate it and see how it connects to wider issues. So it's really special.
And do you remember, just thinking back to, well, sort of rewinding slightly to what you were saying about cinema, were there particular films or filmmakers at that time that really inspired you and that you've sort of remained faithful to, you still think about? I'm wondering what it was about. I mean, obviously the escapism of cinema. Do you still go back to some of those films and filmmakers, or was it more general? You just loved the experience of cinema and the escapism.
It was much more general then, I think. Going back, there was something about kind of raw documentary or you know, social realism and things like that. I was very intrigued in. But without like having a class consciousness on it, it was just something that really appealed to me. How you can talk about these very important stories or lived experiences or narratives within cinema and storytelling. So I think, yeah, Agnes Varda was, you know, I was a big fan of her work, obviously, because what she does is very experimental as well. She talks about issues, but is quite experimental with them. So there was a lot of freedom in her work for me. But I would say it's very much then, it was just films in general. Yeah.
And then after Nottingham, you went to South Wales to continue studying photography. Was that documentary photography specifically, or?
Yeah, so there was a 10-year gap.
Okay.
Yeah, so I studied photography at Nottingham Trent University. And then during that 10 years, I worked as a kind of community arts facilitator. So I always had like a thread of photography running through my work. So I was very much involved in migrant solidarity within my practice. So I would work with communities and different marginalised groups as well. So I was working with kind of young offenders or marginalised groups in various different cities and communities. So like for me, it was like a way of using photography to engage politically. And then during that, I would work as a humanitarian worker as well and an activist. So I was working in Calais quite a lot, doing migrant solidarity work, and then living in Italy and Sicily, doing the same similar work there. And actually after Sicily, I got burnt out. So this was like in 2015. And then needed to come home and rest, and then wanted to then focus on kind of my own work and my own practice more. And then that's when I decided to, try and get into the University of South Wales and do an MA in documentary photography, which worked out. So between 2017 and 19, I was studying there. And that was really transformative to me, actually. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to hear you talk about that 10-year gap, that it's not, you know, it's not always the case that people kind of discover photography at school age, do a degree, then go straight on to postgrad and then launch into a career in photography. People have lots of different and complex paths and routes into photography.
Yeah, 100%. And I think when you go into like a master's with a more rounded experience of kind of what you want to explore, it's really useful because you have this short amount of time and you can really focus or kind of delve into your own practice or where you want to expand or a particular issue. Or yeah, it kind of helped me really develop my understanding and actually where I want to go with it and what I want to do. So it's a very rich time for me, even though it was difficult. It was so difficult, but it was really rich.
Yeah, and what experience you brought to that course in Newport compared with where other students must have been coming from? You must have had so many ideas, did you?
Yeah, like, so, I mean, I remember the first day we all sat around a table and talked about who we were and what we were into and what our backgrounds were and what our practices were. And I remember there was another girl there who's now like a dear friend and collaborator. Her name is Gia Macondo-Wills. And she was there and she was talking about her work. She just came out straight out of the BA, actually, in South Wales. And her work was around like race, community, power and representation. And it was almost like an instant connection between us, a real intentional instant connection. And to have the space to talk to another photographer about, you know, we're coming from the same place, different stories, different identities, but essentially we were wanted to challenge the similar things within the canon of British documentary photography, say. So yeah, it was so rewarding to have built existing relationships that we're still talking about today. You know, we're still talking about those issues and challenging those things today together. And like as teachers, as artists. So yeah. And the course in itself was really, when you put in a documentary course, like people approach it differently. And yeah, so it was really, it could be quite challenging at times. But I think that's what art school is good for. You know, you create these spaces for debate and constructive criticism to learn and develop. So yeah, it was really good.
For people that aren't familiar with your work, could you sort of describe it? Like what, you know, even your interests or how you use photography, how you think it's useful in terms of what it can do.
Yeah, Oh God, that's going to be quite difficult. No, don't be sorry. It's good. It's good for me to articulate it. So my background is in kind of participatory arts and documentary photography, but I would say now, I don't know, it, having these labels, I don't know if they're like useful or not, but I think I identify more with, like, at the moment, a documentary photographic artist, which sounds really pretentious, but I feel more aligned to it. Do you know what I mean? And this will change over time. But yeah, so I guess my work, I think about storytelling and how I can use like photography to visually transform kind of personal and political narratives. And that's done through like this symbiotic relationship of like practice and making and this kind of intersection of theory as well. Theory is really important to me. It's been really freeing for me to kind of connect with thinkers and theorists. It really inspires me. I'm really interested in the photographic relationship to absence and how invisibility or like absence or absence of stories or histories, personal and political ones, can to this invisibility, how it can be used as a tool for possibility to kind of visualize, erase, and misrepresented histories, if that makes sense. So I think if there is a lacking in representation, like what possibilities can, what new visual possibilities can be created in that absence, if that makes sense. And I think, sorry, go
So, no, I
on.
was going to say, I love something you said there about invisibility as a tool for possibility.
Yeah, so
Powerful.
what, thanks. Like, yeah, I think instead of seeing as a negative, it's like, oh, obviously there is a negative, because when there's absence and invisibility within histories and narratives, there's often power at play in representation. But like, what can be created in those spaces? It's really exciting to me, because what that creates is something, a possibility for new imaginings. So yeah, that excites me. And I guess the themes that anchor my work at the moment are like class, labor, as in work, family, care, and liberation, I'd say. But and how all those things exist in capitalism, late capitalism now. So it's really complex, but it's not it for me. It makes sense. I don't know if it's going to make sense to the
Yeah,
listeners.
no, I think you've described it really well. I was saying to you earlier, I've been rereading the Putting Myself in the Picture, the Jo Spence book, and any chance I get, I love sort of quoting her. But there's something I just want to read quickly, which is a quote. So at the front of the book, Jo Spence has put a quote from Adrienne Rich. It's about truth, but it's also about visibility, and it's quite a nice. I'll just read it. I'll just go ahead and read it, just to paraphrase it slightly. Truth is not one thing or even a system. It is an increasing complexity. The pattern of the carpet is the surface. When we look closely, or when we become weavers, we learn of the tiny multiple threads unseen in the overall pattern, the knots on the underside of the carpet. Just really like that.
That's really beautiful, isn't it? Spencer's writing on class and representation is super important, and I think it often gets overlooked, especially within her work. But the way she writes is so poignant, isn't it? And yeah, it's a really, really nice quote. Thanks
I've
for
learned
sharing that.
not at all. I've learned so much from her, and just the people she brings into her writing, and the people she collaborates with in her photographic work as well.
Her work for me at uni, at my MA, was so important, because her writing, because it was really hard to source. It was really difficult for me there, because I was looking for women photographers or women writers who were talking about photography, the image, representation, and class, and all these, these complex ideas. But it was kind of like barren to be able to find work out there. I mean, there's some, but it's not, I couldn't see myself or my experiences or my ideas in any work or writing. So when, yeah, Joseph, you know, her writing, it was so important to me back then and still is now. And I think, you know, it really gives me fire to my work. She's so important to me.
Yeah. I'm remembering that Tish Murtha studied in Newport. Was there?
Yeah.
Did you learn about her there? Was there? Would there have been much talk about past students like that? And
so yeah. She would have been one that a photographer that was we were referenced to, but she was rarely. She didn't come up in conversation that much, to be honest with you. And I actually I learned about her work through a different source, not through university. So that's really interesting, isn't it? That, you know, that she wasn't like really present as a as an artist, particularly because she stood, you know, she studied there.
Yeah, me too. I think in general, I don't think I was aware of her work or her name at all until about 2015, and it was, I remember it was Roberta McGrath based in Edinburgh who talked about one of her pictures in a talk. That was the first I heard. And now obviously her daughter's been doing so much work to get her pictures and her work better known, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and her book, I think Youth Unemployment, that was really my introduction to her. But I think there's a pattern, isn't there? Like, you know, if we think about Spence, if we think about Tish Murtha, like there's a struggle to be seen when it, in regards to class, like, and gender. And I think, it speaks wider on issues that are happening in photography, really, if I'm going to be frank.
Yeah. How do you feel about maybe it's too general. I was going to say, how do you feel about the art world and the, you know, the sort of gallery exhibiting photographs in galleries? You know, is that something that has been important to you, or are you, you know, the way you've described your work and your interests and your practice, it sounds like you found a way to not have to sort of rely on exhibitions like that and sort of using the art world system. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. So I think exhibiting work is really important because it's really important for our work to be seen and to be interacted with, for me anyway. When you exhibit work, it's almost like when you put curate work together, it's almost like you can understand the narrative or the different narratives or that kind of interaction that you can get with the viewers as well. You learn a lot from speaking to audiences and viewers about your work. So for me, it's been like a mixture. I've had some amazing opportunities to work with festivals and galleries, but also when there's been kind of gaps and spaces, I would get in contact with galleries, or I would look for residencies where I can make sure that I'm still situating my work and looking at my work on walls and what that would look like and how it would sit and how it would communicate. So it's been like, I would say it's been half and half of quite DIY, going out there, contacting people or making use of existing relationships. If they've got a space or a gallery space that I could say, I propose a residency, you know, do you have any funding for a week or any material costs? And then we'll sit in residency and at the end kind of show an exhibition from that residency. Or so it's been a bit of a mixture. And I like, in all honesty, at one point for me, like, I thought exhibitions were everything, to have like gallery representation and to be, you know, in the biggest galleries and wanting to strive for that exposure. And I guess I bought into the myth that that's what being an artist is, to have the exposure. But I think it's not. I think it's about how we interact with our practice and how we kind of continue and like have this holistic practice. And I think what I've noticed, if you focus on that, then the other things will come eventually, you know, the right galleries and the right opportunities will pop up. You know, a big gallery, I don't know, I'm not going to mention a gallery, but it might not be the right gallery for my work, and that's absolutely fine. It's about finding the right people, the right institutions and the right galleries that align with your ethics or ideas or mission. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I absolutely agree. Yeah. And I think from my point of view, public galleries anyway are always thinking about other ways they can support artists and photographers, not just through exhibitions, because of course galleries are struggling to be able to present the number of exhibitions they want to present. And I think I think you're right. I think exhibitions aren't necessarily the best opportunity to pursue, and there are other ways of getting your work in the public realm. But then again, of course, there is a sort of network of galleries in the UK, and they're all understood to be great sort of platforms for the visibility of people's work. Yeah, that's interesting. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because, you know, you, as an artist, and, you know, you do want these space, you know, you do want to be able to be seen and have a platform. And I don't think there's anything wrong with striving for that either, but it's just when it comes to it, like your well-being around that, it shouldn't be all about that, you know, should be about the work that we're making. Rather than, yeah, but you know, some people disagree, and that's absolutely fine. We have different approaches. Everyone has different approaches. So,
yeah.
For me, there's a push though to have work that talks about power and representation in these spaces, because I think it needs to be in these large institutions. And I think things are changing. There is a shift to who gets access. Seems quite slow, but I think, like you said, the more public galleries are the more it's more in yeah there's more kind of interesting conversations happening.
Yeah, and on that note, and again sort of massive question, but what are the issues, the barriers at the moment for class in photography and for sort of more visibility? Perhaps it's an obvious question too, but you know, what do you see as the biggest sort of problems at the moment that are creating these barriers?
Well, I think, you know, we always have to look at what's happening politically and what's happening in society. And if there's class inequality in a society, which, you know, there is hugely in this country and, you know, globally, there's going to be barriers, isn't there, to access and resources and who gets what and who gets seen. But when it kind of comes with art, it's really complex and it's really tricky. I mean, class in itself is super complex here, and the working classes aren't this like blob of identity. And I question like the label working class, how you use. So if we think of how useful that is, because I think it's, we can't really, let me think about how to put this. If we think of like a class of workers instead, in those class of workers, there's different levels of access and equality. Where I come from is this kind of like my identity with class and my experience with class is being the working poor, on benefits, and the criminalized class. So if you come from that kind of experience of class in poverty, you're going to have less access and less opportunity and less resources than just to say a person who was maybe, you know, working class but a teacher, for example, or, you know, come from a more salaried or a higher paid working class position. It's getting really complex, but I think, you know, that's that. So the barriers are depending on where you sit on the class spectrum, I guess. And so for me growing up, I didn't have artists around me in like the traditional sense. We don't know, my family don't know any artists. We don't know anyone like that kind of went to university. It's not to say that creativity and culture didn't exist, because it did. Like, for example, we come from like an Irish immigrant community, so there was a lot of storytelling, yeah, and like storytelling and music through music, and we have got this like oral history. But yeah, there was no artists in, you know, the sense that, oh, I'm going to be like that person. So already we don't under, like, you know, I didn't understand that I could be one of those people. So that is a barrier in itself, because, you know, most of the people in my family were doing like hard manual labor, or what people would class as unskilled, or, you know, domestic labor. So yeah, it's like the barrier is already there when you can't even imagine yourself being an artist. You know what I mean? So it's like a structural thing, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, you've answered a really, really big and slightly
it's
for
massive.
Me really, really well. Yeah, no, you've explained it really well. Sorry, I interrupted you there, did you?
Yeah, and I just think the barriers are like, yeah, so there's different levels of equality in the class of workers, or, you know, the working classes. And I think the photo industry, and also, you know, universities as well, need to understand and embrace equity. You know, people have different circumstances, so we need to kind of allocate resources to, you know, we need to understand. I think it comes from this like intersectional framework of understanding that we all come from different circumstances. People have more than others, even in like working class identity. Some people are poorer than others, yeah. So to create an equal outcome, I think these industries need to start people need to start taking risks more, and try and understand as well what, you know, how people's different circumstances and background will affect their access to resources and opportunity. So for example, I know a friend who runs a course at a university in photography, and what he's starting to do is starting to think about the applicant's socioeconomic background, yeah, their background or their position in society, and how that connects to like class or race or gender or disability, all those things. And instead of like looking at the grades and thinking, okay, that person hasn't got the best grades, but thinking about, okay, this work has potential, this person has passion, you know, they have a fire to pursue this art form. Take a risk, yeah, take a chance on that person. And also the risk, it's not even a risk, it's almost just understanding that people have different circumstances up until that point. And yeah, if you've come from a poor background, the likelihood is you've had a poor education, or you've had a poor access to resources and education. So yeah, I could talk about this all day. It's a big one. And, you know, I think there's some amazing stuff. There's like dismantling that needs to happen, and then restorative healing that needs to happen in gallery spaces and institutions. And I think it's happening in different spaces. But what's interesting, I'm talking to more that like I've been in contact with, like curators and producers, which aren't particularly in photography, but more in like art, but like arts. And they're having those conversations. So I'm wondering if these, I think there's more conversations like this needs to be happening in photographic spaces personally. It just feels like we're a bit behind.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So
Thank you. I want to ask you about your project, Are You There?
Oh, yeah.
maybe as a sort of bridge to that, asking about that, and you don't have to react to this at all. I wondered if I could read again another.
Yeah,
another,
go for it.
Joe Spence, putting myself in the picture, because I was reading this the other day. This is from a chapter called Visual Autobiography, where she's talking about the Beyond the Family album exhibition in 1979. And she writes, "In my early photographs, there is no record of my appalling health. no record of the pointless years shunted around schools inside formal education, no record of a broken marriage and the havoc this so-called failure caused me, no record of hard work done for countless employers, no record of trying to please parents and other authority figures, no record of struggles. Moreover, those happy, serious, loving, miserable, but always passive visual moments which do exist, those moments which only show surface information about me, give no indication at all of the wider social, economic, and political histories of our disgusting, class-divided society. They're rendered invisible within my family album, in quotes. But then this is normal to most families, who are encouraged only to photograph their leisure, their consumption, or their ownership, and to show the harmony of their lives. And then she goes on to say, I began to reverse the process of the way I had been constructed as a woman by deconstructing myself visually in an attempt to identify the process by which I had been put together. Oh, it's just so much.
You read that so well. And I know that bit of writing. Thank you for that.
It's just a brilliant book.
Yeah, it kind of gives you tingles.
It does, yeah. I really enjoy reading it, as you can tell.
No, you can tell. No, you read it so beautifully. And I remember, I remember that quote. I actually think I put that in my development folder for uni. Right. So it's really weird that you've picked up on that.
I remember, I couldn't find it, but she talks brilliant about photographing these families that would come into her when she had a professional sort of portrait studio and she was doing weddings and family pictures. These families fighting with each other, arguing, coming into the studio looking miserable. And then for a split second, they'd all smile. And that would be the lasting record. And just how much she became so disappointed in the fact that she was the person creating those records, you know, later on, how sort of disillusioned by it she was.
Yeah, it can become quite a burden, I imagine. But the whole process made her, you know, that drew her to that theoretical understanding. So it's so beautiful that she did that work to give her that knowing and understanding.
That's right. But back to you and your work, Kelly. Yeah, could you talk a bit about your project, Are You There?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, that project, which is still ongoing, you know, as these things always are with me anyway. So yeah, it's really about this lacking in, so this absence essentially within a relationship with my father. So my dad is strange to me. I never really met him apart from one encounter, which I talk about in the work, where, you know, one night when I was around 7, he come to my house and put his hand through the letterbox to make contact, and then kind of disappeared after that, after he found out he wasn't getting in. And that was it. And then, like, I think there was a phone call as well at one point. But but there was so much mystery around my dad's existence. And so, yeah, just at the time, I was kind of really thinking about, like, my history, who I am, what am I made up on? You know, you there's this part of you that you don't know, you know, your other parent. It's like, who are they and how does that make me? So there's all these internal, more kind of deeper questions that I was asking in my life. And I just noticed this kind of lacking in my family wanting to talk about it. And that was that was an existing relationship or dynamic. You know, what I did know is that my dad had died, and I found out through, you know, a passing comment that my grandma made some years before I made the work. But I also found out that, you know, his brother, my dad's brother, was a clairvoyant in, you know, alive and well, and a kind of infamous clairvoyant in Derby. So I kind of looked my uncle up and started to, I went to his, like, nights of clairvoyancy, like, undercover, which was, like, you know, ethically, I don't know, maybe a bit wrong. That's why I stopped doing it, you know, it didn't feel right. He never kind of made out that he knew who I was, but you know, at the end he did come up to me and like grabbed my hand and looked deeply in my eyes and said, you know, it's really nice to, you know, meet you. It's really nice to have you here. And that made me think, does he know who I am? And this idea of like questioning, like, you know, what's the truth here? And this unknowing. So yeah, there was like ethics around that. So I didn't want to go back because it felt wrong. And, you know, I was going to, you know, I had all these ideas. People were saying at uni, this is when I developed the course, the project, take an undercover camera and all this kind of thing. But I didn't go there. But then I thought, but this idea of clairvoyancy, I'm going to continue using them or collaborating with them, using the medium to see if I can understand who my father was through this practice. And then it dawned on me that it's perfect because, you know, the medium is the message in both senses of like the medium being the clairvoyant and the medium being the photographer. So the medium being the photograph. So what I would do is this practice of connecting with mediums and clairvoyants and psychics, and then having these sessions with them, asking if it's okay to record, and then going back after and looking at the and listening to the recordings and kind of making a transcript and then seeing anything that would visually pop up in those transcripts. And then I would make and construct images around that work and this real kind of attempt to kind of visualize, like visually manifest this invisible man. So yeah, it's quite a complex project, but it was really interesting. And through that, I continue working with my family, and then more openness around the silence would develop, which would lead to new ways of making images. So there was this family line, and there was a clairvoyant line, and both had biases and truths and their, you know, speculations of what he was and their own opinions around that. And then I would, you know, at the same time mirror that in photography, so have some truth and have some where, you know, eventually it all just got blurred. But what it did do for me was this, it healed. It was a healing process, and I could take control of a narrative that I had no control of. So yeah, I want to finish it with a video piece, actually.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but I things have taken up in a priority, but I will do that. I will continue it.
Have you been sort of exhibiting it? Has it been on public display at various points along the way? Because is it a number of years now you've been working on it?
Yeah, since 2017. Yeah, it has. It's been at a number of festivals. It's been at Format Festival in Derby, which, you know, was a dream because it's my hometown. And it's been at Bristol Photo Festival. There's a publication out on it. It's been in different iterations. It's been, you know, it's travelled more than I have. It's been to Canada to be at the exhibit Exposure Fest, and then China as well, Odessa, Ukraine. Yeah, so many places. It's more travel than I am, Ben, which is nice. But I think for that it needs to exist in a book, and it needs to be completed in a video. But yeah, there's other things that are priority to me at the moment.
There's really so much interesting there in relation to truth and, you know, family album, obviously, and just that question, is it, back to one of the quotes I used earlier, you know, what is truth, and is it any less true than, you know, the family albums that we have that have been sort of constructed for us with perhaps these rather fake family moments? And
yeah, I think it was Spence quite a lot through making this work on talking about the imagination and theatrics and why theatrics is really important to create new visual, I think what she, I don't know, paraphrasing, but to create new visual territories. And it's still a means of communicating real stories. But yeah, it talks on wider issues within photography, as like, when does fact become fiction and so on, and yeah, truth. And but for me, it's a real tool to be able to construct and fabricate and use theatrics and the imagination to talk about real life things. So because that's where I think I argue that documentary photography in its traditional form is quite limited, how it can go deeper. But for me, it's like more of an expanded practice where maybe you're kind of intersecting things like theatre or text or audio, and you can talk about, it becomes more, it can communicate more complex issues, I think more strongly, in my opinion. It's a deeper level of communication.
It's perhaps not quite the right reference point, but it makes me think of Werner Herzog and his around, this sort of ecstatic truth that you get through a blend of fact and fiction, that it's a sort of truer, deeper truth.
Yeah, exactly. And like pulling out the themes of, so that work for me with Are You There was very, the stories and the messages and the facts and the lies and these kind of subjective truths, it was really fragmented to me. And so, the work is visually really fragmented. So trying to like pull out on the, how these things exist in the world. And yeah, I try and do that through all my practice. So I recently did a residency. I was asked to come and do a residency on the cost of living crisis, and all through the research and the feelings that I was getting, it's just like, how absurd is this? This is terrifying. It's absurd. So like trying to hone in on those absurdities. Yeah. So like kind of seeing how these stories sit in the world and how they make you feel. So with Are You There, it was very fragmented. So the work is visually, the outcome is very fragmented.
Kelly, before I forget, where can people find out more about your work? Is there a website or Instagram? What's the best?
I'm making a website at the moment because I've been told off a lot for not having one. So I don't have an address just yet for that. But my Instagram is, my handle is kelly.o.bryan. So yeah, I'll send you that and you can
tag
it. Yeah.
Just looking at the time, and I've kept you for a long time, but I did want to ask what you're working on now, and if there's anything coming up that you can talk about, some things you're working on at the moment.
So there's some things I can talk about and some things I can't, but I can maybe just talk about a little bit. Yeah, so I'm about to start a PhD in October. So finally got fully funded for that. And yeah, that PhD is going to be interrogating a lot of the things that I've been speaking about today. Like it's going to be looking at British documentary photography and the representation or lacking of representation of women, working class women and labour. So looking in particularly about care, paid and unpaid labour and capitalism. Now that might change as PhDs go, they often do change in questions, but that's the kind of themes that I'm going to be looking at. And kind of it's a practice-based PhD, so I'm going to be going deeper into my like that questioning of how an expanded documentary practice can talk more on complex issues around class and the things that I look at. So that's really exciting and also a bit terrifying at the same time. It's like, my journey into becoming a researcher in more of an academic way. So yeah, that's going to be 3.5 years, and then we'll see where that goes. I'm going to be using my work as a starting point that I started in 2004, those very first pictures that I was taking of the women in my family. So that's come full circle. So it's nice to make that work useful to talk about wider stuff. And yeah, and then I'm also working on some very exciting exhibitions for 2024 and 2025. So, but I can't really go too much into that at the moment. But yeah, watch the space.
That's brilliant. Thank you. That's really exciting about your PhD. And thank you so much for your time. It's been brilliant to talk to you, and you've been so articulate, and I really appreciate you starting your holiday with this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I live for this, so it's perfect to start my holiday like this, to be honest with you. You know, I love talking about this, and you know, I think from the first time we met, we were able to talk so clearly about our interests and where we align. So yeah, it's just really nice to go deeper into that then.
Yeah, thank you again, and have a fantastic holiday, and I look forward to catching up with you in person somewhere soon.
Well, thank you. Cheers for this opportunity.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
You've been listening to A Conversation with Kelly O'Brien. If you're interested to hear more, there are 50 other episodes of Photography Down the Line, the Stills podcast, available from your podcast provider. Thank you for listening.